Well, friends, I want to begin by picking up a bit on what Art Cuby talked about in the context of the role of seniors in this country and in British Columbia. And it proves to me this large turnout, again and again, what many of us have known for a long time. I've certainly known it. Namely, that our seniors remain vitally concerned and interested and connected about the important Canadian policies and programs which affect them, yes, but they're concerned more about their children and their children's children. They're concerned more about the future generations and themselves. They're concerned about the future well-being of this great country of ours, Canada, the country which we so proudly sang our national anthem. I know that health care is a particular concern, perhaps, to seniors, perhaps no more of a concern than it is to other people. I've traveled this country from coast to coast as Royal Commissioner and as Premier before that time as Royal Commissioner. I heard stories which were absolutely heartbreaking and indicated the concerns about the maintenance, the preservation, the enhancement of health care. Let me give you one example. This has nothing to do with age. A 37-year-old mother by the name of Hannah James Hodder came to me in St. John's, Newfoundland. And keep in mind that our meetings, when I was here in Vancouver, they started at 8:30 a.m. and didn't get finished until 8:30 p.m., 9 p.m., we worked straight throughout the piece. I was a one-man band, one-person Royal Commissioner. And Hannah James Hodder drove 100 miles or more from an outpost of Newfoundland to come to the Royal Commission hearings to tell her story. She was what we called an add-on. So many of the organizations were there, nurses and doctors and other interested groups. She was an individual citizen. And she started her presentation by saying that she was a 37-year-old mother of a young boy, 6-7 years of age, who had contracted cancer. And she started to fight back tears, understandably. I have to tell you that the moment I saw that, it was hard for me to hold back my tears. As she struggled through, voice quavering, she said, "Mr. Romano, we watched our son, 6-7 years of age, fighting courageously this battle of cancer, in hospital, strung up with tubes and all of the necessary support systems, but really not understanding why, suffering from huge pain, looked after lovingly by the nurses and all of the people in hospital, but still not understanding what was happening, and afraid. And we visited him, and stayed and slept with him. And finally," she said, and again, voices cracking all the time and the pause of a tear or two, she said, "You know, we asked the hospital authorities, could we please take him home? And we did. And there he was, at home, with his brothers and sisters and with his mom and dad, and the pain was still there and getting worse. And he had a little bit of help, but at least he was, in all of his fear and agony, surrounded by his mother, his father, his family, and his immediate loved ones, so that when he died," she said, "he died with dignity. And my message to you, Mr. Commissioner, my plea to you is, make sure that your report has a provision that allows for palliative care. Care for us in our last, final period of life, regardless of age. For a 7-year-old son, for an 87 or 97-year-old senior, make sure that we have this fundamental dignity accorded to us." I was so struck that in the midst of her grief and trying to overcome this particular challenge, this woman had the courage and the dedication to look beyond her own personal loss and suffering and to think about the well-being of all Canadians in advocating palliative care. She was concerned about building a better health care system in a narrow but a very important area, building a stronger and better Canada. She was able to rise to that occasion, my friends, and I tell you that is a source of inspiration, and you know what? Palliative care ended up, because of that, in the Romano recommendation as a reform to be implemented. I tell you that story because seniors, it is said by some, well, they have a greater concern about health care. Maybe that's so. But I don't think you're here for your own personal concerns or gains. You're here because of your children and your children's children. And you know, you're here also because, those of you who are seniors, you helped to build this country. In fact, you built this country. The challenges were very daunting. We're only 31, 32 million people, and we have huge distances to cover. We've got a climate to defeat. Well, maybe not in British Columbia, but certainly in Saskatchewan. We have, I say, 31 million people, a small population. We live next door to a powerful neighbor to the south with a different set of values and a different set of cultural beliefs. They are our neighbors nonetheless. And you know, many of us, some of our mothers and fathers even, came from all parts of the world. My mom and dad came from Ukraine with my sister. She was born over there. I was born in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I'm first generation. My mother and my father lived and died knowing only 150 words of English. In those days, they could shop and go to church and visit with their friends and neighbors without speaking either one of Canada's two official languages. And that's what I learned. That was my first language. And they came here in search of freedom, the opportunity to build a better place for their children and their children's children. And this is not a story about Mike Romano, my dad. It's a story about all of us in this country. We have come, all of us, most of us, from another place in this world, from various ethnic and cultural and linguistic backgrounds. We came here because we wanted to build a better life. And because we came from different backgrounds, we soon realized that we had to get along with each other. We had to get along with each other. And the way to do that was to practice the principle of cooperation, a practical vehicle cooperation, to help us overcome our obstacles, to learn from our friends and neighbors, and to attain our goals. Cooperation. Realizing that so often in any society, we can, by working together, achieve so much more to improve society than by working alone. As important as that lonely work might be. That's not to say that we don't cherish individuality, that we don't cherish individual civil rights, that we not encourage people to be the very best that they can be, to have personal growth and self-fulfillment. Of course we do. But unlike our neighbors and friends to the south, where the predominance is on individual self-interest, we in this country, thanks to the seniors and thanks to those who came from all over the world and were forced to cooperate to overcome climate and geography, we were able to combine our individual interests with community interests in a finely tuned balance of community and individual concerns. And in doing so, we have built what I still believe is the best country in the entire world. The best country in the entire world. We believe in intergenerational sharing. When we're younger, we look after our older folks. And when our children are younger, they look after us. We believe in interregional sharing, the have and the have-not provinces, cooperation. These are great values. These are great impulses. And that is why I believe you are here today, because you still share those impulses and those values. And all I can say to you
And I wish I could say to my dear mom and dad, both of whom now passed away, and I didn't when they were alive, but to say to you, thank you and God bless you for having had the guts, the determination, and the political will to build a civilized, decent, and democratic Canada by these values. Now you might think, how does this work with health care? I think it's a logical jumping off point for the specific issue which I want to address. Based on my Royal Commission report, as Rudy points out, building on values. That's what I've been talking about. And I want to talk about the report and the future of Canada's health care system. Medicare, which I think arguably may be our greatest accomplishment as Canadians in the field of social policy and public policy. It certainly identifies ourselves one to each other, and in some ways it identifies Canadians to the rest of the world. I know a lot of people don't agree with me on that, but I hear that. I heard that as Royal Commissioner. Medicare, a program that has carried with it the values of fairness, of sharing, of cooperation that I've talked about, and compassion. Now it's 18 months since the Romano report was tabled. And one might ask, where do we stand? Well, I can tell you, in my judgment, simply stated, we stand at a fundamental crossroads. A choice will have to be made very soon by all Canadians about which road we take with respect to the issue of the future of Medicare, as we know it, as many of you in this room pioneered and worked so hard to establish. And the time for action is now. We've had studies galore, right up to here, still no reforms. We've had large amounts of cash transferred from one government level, Ottawa, to other governments. Still no reforms. We've had a Royal Commission's blueprint for change, with the support of an overwhelming number of Canadians. About 80% of all Canadians still support the Romano recommendations, and yet no reforms. We seem to have stalled. And I say that the time is over. The time is finished for those who call for yet more study and more reports. We know what we have to do to preserve and to protect and sustain our healthcare system. The time is now for action by the Canadians of British Columbia and Canada. Now you might think, how does this work with healthcare? I think it's a logical jumping off point for the specific issue which I want to address. Based on my Royal Commission report, as Rudy points out, building on values. That's what I've been talking about. And I want to talk about the report and the future of Canada's health care system. Medicare, which I think arguably may be our greatest accomplishment as Canadians in the field of social policy and public policy. It certainly identifies ourselves one to each other, and in some ways it identifies Canadians to the rest of the world. I know a lot of people don't agree with me on that, but I hear that. I heard that as Royal Commissioner. Medicare, a program that has carried with it the values of fairness, of sharing, of cooperation that I've talked about, and compassion. Now it's 18 months since the Romano report was tabled. And one might ask, where do we stand? Well, I can tell you, in my judgment, simply stated, we stand at a fundamental crossroads. A choice will have to be made very soon by all Canadians about which road we take with respect to the issue of the future of Medicare, as we know it, as many of you in this room pioneered and worked so hard to establish. And the time for action is now.
We've had studies galore, right up to here, still no reforms. We've had large amounts of cash transferred from one government level, Ottawa, to other governments. Still no reforms. We've had a Royal Commission's blueprint for change. With the support of an overwhelming number of Canadians, about 80% of all Canadians still support the Romano recommendations, and yet no reforms. We seem to have stalled. And I say that the time is over. The time is finished for those who call for yet more study and more reports. We know what we have to do to preserve and to protect and sustain our healthcare system. The time is now for action by the Canadians of British Columbia and Canada. But we seem to have stalled after all of these reports. You know, on my website, when I was Royal Commissioner, we had 31 million people enter into the website. 31 million, that's the size of Canada. Thousands of letters, hearings all over the country, boxes of information, independent studies, 43 independent studies. We looked at everything, user fees, we looked at a variety of issues, premiums, we looked at a variety of concerns, globalization. And we looked at the question of whether or not our program today of Medicare is still as relevant as it was way back then, 40 years ago. But we seem to have stalled. I'm not saying my report is perfect. I think it could have been improved with more time. But it does set out a blueprint for moving ahead. But we've stalled. And in stalling, in seeming to be not going in the purposeful direction we ought to, is it any wonder, therefore, that there seems to be a growing concern by some Canadians in the confidence that their health care system will be there for them when they need it? Confidence may be eroding. It may be eroding because Canadians may be fearing that our society does not have the will to attain the objectives that are clearly set out before them. And that's bad enough. But what makes it even more difficult is the environment and the arguments in the current environment, arguments now which are replete, arguments which even cast more doubt, arguments which I will say masquerade as new arguments and novel arguments, but are really old arguments. Those who argue for private delivery and private pay for health care think that's new. Well, I was there in 1962 in Saskatchewan, and I lived before we had Medicare, when it was private. And I saw parents worrying themselves sick about getting sick, losing their livelihoods, losing their farms, losing their businesses. And now these arguments are there again, which tend to undermine the values of our healthcare system. And the old all of a sudden becomes the new. People say to me, you know, that Romano, he thinks in the box about Medicare. And I say, I do. My box are the values of Canadians. But if you don't agree with it, you too live in a box. Your box is another construct of Medicare and healthcare with a different set of values, and let's not pretend that there's something new about them. 80% of Canadians today say the Commission's prescription for reformation and sustaining the future of healthcare should be there. But still, there is a powerful but very small voice that chip away at Medicare's immune system, an immune system already weakened by funding shortfalls, half-hearted stop-start reforms, huge difficult cuts, and haunted by myths which continue to persist. What are some of these myths?
Myths that just don't seem to want to disappear. Myths that cloud the path ahead for us. Let me just identify them. One myth is that we have in Canada somehow a Medicare system which is one large, monolithic, publicly delivered system, full stop, period. They almost say it's like North Korea or Albania. That's the way they describe it. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. The real truth is we have 13 varying systems of health care, 10 from each of the provinces and 3 from the territories. That's 13. Add Ottawa, and that means 14, because Ottawa provides it to the military and the RCMP. And they vary within these 14 systems. And what's been happening over the last several years or decade is that, in fact, the variations are increasing so that the program of health care is becoming less of a pan-Canadian uniform right of citizenship and becoming more of a patchwork quilt program of Medicare. So it's not true that it's one large monolithic system. A myth. A second myth is that Medicare is entirely funded by you and the taxpayers' dollars. That is not the case. The reality is, however, that only the Canada Health Act insured portions of Medicare are covered by the progressive taxation system and paid for under the public delivery system. And the Canada Health Act talks about hospitals and doctors only. It's a 1984 bill. I've called for the modernization of that because healthcare has changed from hospitals and doctors, as important as they are. Today, for example, drugs are the second highest cost of healthcare in Canada, right behind hospitals and ahead of the doctors. And the future predicts that it's even going to increase more. In fact, in the last 20 to 25 years, healthcare costs for drugs alone, which many need, have more than doubled. But it's not covered. Unless you're in hospital, then you get your medication. But if you're outside a hospital and you need home care, you're outside of the basket of insured services. Home care, primary care, MRIs, mixture of public and private funding, that's outside of the publicly delivered, publicly financed healthcare system. And then there's an entirely different category, dental care, vision care. Unless you're lucky to have an insurance plan, we pay for that out of our own pockets. So, in total, 70% of our healthcare in Canada is public, and 30% is private. 70 public, 30 private. Just a few years ago, it was 80% public and 20% private. It's now changed to 70-30. By the way, the OECD country's average is 80-20. We've slipped to 70-30. And those who argue that it is some monolithic, totally publicly funded system are wrong. There is, in fact, an argument to be made that it should be strengthened in the public sector. But it is indeed a mixed bag of public and private delivery. It's a myth. And the third myth is that it's an exclusive provincial responsibility. Exclusive provincial responsibility. Some premiers say, hands off to Ottawa. They say, just give us the money, Ottawa. Trust us, we'll look after all the rest. Well, that's a myth. The truth is that it isn't exclusively provincial. It is a shared responsibility, where the provinces primarily have the responsibility, but Ottawa has an important role to play by setting national standards and guidelines, removing that patchwork quilt that talked about, and the Canada Health Act, which is exclusively an Ottawa bill, defines our core five principles and defines our core coverage of doctors and hospitals. It needs to be reformed. And it's a clear example that it is not exclusively provincial. It is a clear example that Ottawa has a role and a responsibility on behalf of all Canadians everywhere to set the terms and the conditions and standards to provide top quality care, accessible care, and Medicare care when we need it. That is the role of cooperation. Now, I point no fingers at anybody because I was as guilty as anybody. When I was premier, we used to meet behind closed doors on this issue of exclusive provincial versus primary and how do you build in Ottawa. Behind closed doors. I'll say a word about that in a moment. And I know how acrimonious and bitter the debates were in this regard. The truth of the matter is that the Canadian public is fed up to hear with intergovernmental fighting premiers against the prime minister and vice versa. They don't want to hear any of this business of the jurisdictions. What they want is the road to reform embarked upon and the reforms carried out. They want an end to intergovernmental warfare. They want cooperation. Cooperation. And then there's another myth, the one that Rudy alluded to. You've heard this yourself on television and radio and newspapers. Medicare is no longer sustainable. How many times have we heard that the last month or 2 months? And you see the political leaders lined up on television, all of them, and they say to us, it's no longer sustainable. Is it little wonder that some people might say, hey, our premiers and leaders say it's no longer sustainable? But be careful, my friends. You have to define what sustainable means. Sustainability, used by some of our leaders in Canada, means a commitment to reform our Medicare system within the principles of Medicare as Douglas envisioned it in Saskatchewan in 1962, in order to make sure that it's there well into the future and that it's modernized and more efficient, designed to leverage the changes which are necessary. People who want to work for change within the plan. That's sustainability to some. But the flip side of the coin is that the word sustainability to others means we can't any longer support that model based on caring for each other. We need to, quote, think out of the box. And we have to make it more sustainable. How? By more private delivery and more private pay. You've heard those arguments. And so the word sustainability is kind of like a Trojan horse. It's filled with misinformation about healthcare financing, often informed by ideology and not by evidence. And so it's little wonder that the premiers can only agree on sustainability. Well, you can all agree we have to make it sustainable. But how do you make it sustainable? There are those who say we make it sustainable by having more private pay. That would effectively undermine, if not destroy, our Medicare plan. There are those who say we're going to make it more sustainable by reforming our Medicare plan. But they can't agree to the details because there are these differences. And what does it actually mean, sustainability? Well, I'll tell you what it means. It means the following. You've got to balance resources. That means cash, but also the delivery of health care. You've got to balance the needs of people and the services. Needs tend to evolve. Services change. And resources are up and down. It's a tough job of balancing in order to make something sustainable and lasting. And I said that there are two competing visions, but there are two competing visions as to how to achieve that balance. One vision is based on the premise that healthcare is a commodity. This vision argues that healthcare's ebbs and flows on sustainability will be determined by the marketplace, by the New York or the Toronto Stock Exchange. That markets and free enterprise will determine the proper balance. And the best examples of the market commodity approach for this sustainability issue is America and Switzerland. They're about the only ones in the OECD who support it. No wonder the Fraser Institute says, let's study all the OECD but exclude America and Switzerland. They exclude America and Switzerland for good reason. Because if you put them into the mix, the outcomes there do not support the commodities system.
What's the result in that commodities approach? Every year, about 14% of the gross domestic product, that means all the goods and services that Americans produce, 14% is dedicated to health, and still over 100 million people of its citizens are uninsured, they have no insurance, or are inadequately insured. That's one vision. Commodity, markets. The second one is the one that we have. The vision based on the notion that healthcare is not a commodity. It's a public good. It's a community responsibility. That we are obligated as citizens in a civilized society to look after each other in our time arguably of greatest need. When we're sick or ill or injured, it knows no boundaries, illness or injury. One thing that is certain for all of us here in the Queenie Theater and for everybody on this planet, one thing is certain, we are born, we live, we may get ill, we may get injured, but one thing is common, we will die. Why in the world, one might ask, therefore, should we organize the delivery of our healthcare system on boundaries like ability to pay? If the enemy is borderless, then surely, in order to confront the enemy, I refer enemy here to illness, to organize ourselves to a community, borderless concept, the public good. And I got to tell you, governments are charged in Canada with that balance of services, needs, and resources. Not easy for governments either. There's no doubt about it, it's difficult. But there's one thing about governments which is different from markets, and that is that governments, when they have to make their choices, at least make their choices competing against other societal values. There's Medicare, then there's education, then there are roads. Environment, early childhood development, you name it. And they are responsible because I don't think you can defeat the chairman of General Electric or General Motors very easily. And maybe it's not so easy even in our system to defeat political leaders who don't make the right judgments, but at least in a democracy we can hold them accountable to that, and that is an important difference as well. The evidence is clear. Those are the two models, commodities and public good. The evidence is clear. The expression of the will of Canadians is clear. We believe strongly in the principle that health care and Medicare is a public good, that we're there as a community to help one another in our times of need. And that is what the governments must commit themselves to now and start acting now in order to achieve. And for those of you who might think in this room that this is just Romano talking and expressing points of view, just consider this. I gave you the American percentage of health care spent on the GDP, 14%. In Canada, it's 9.5%. Before Medicare, we tracked America's percentage of GDP identically. Then we adopted Medicare and we leveled off, and America continued to rise. And why are they rising? Because they have a competitive market, and American studies from Harvard University show that the difference between just overhead and administrative costs, my friends, note the words, overhead and administrative costs for health care. I'm not talking about nurses or doctors. Just the overhead and administrative costs cost the average American per capita per year $1,150 U.S., $1,150 U.S. just for administration and overhead, and in Canada it is $325 U.S. per capita. We are two-thirds less expensive. Money which moves away from the lawyers and all of the private insurance companies and hopefully is dedicated to the nurses and the frontline workers who deliver the health care of Canadians. It is efficient. It is sustainable. I say don't take my word for it. Don't believe my statements.
although I think the report is based on the evidence that I've just talked about. But just consider this as additional evidence of what I've talked about, namely that it's sustainable. A few weeks ago, the Federal Finance Department, my friends, no less, somehow this was leaked, completed a report in January of this year, which was reported in the Globe and Mail a few weeks ago, about sustainability. And here's what the Department of Finance report said. Quote, listen to this carefully. The analysis, referring to their analysis, discounts theories that rising health care costs will bankrupt federal and provincial governments. Discounts the theories. It goes on to say the aging population alone, by the way, for which you are being wrongly, many of you blame, the aging population alone will not drive up costs astronomically, Finance Canada, not Roy Romanoff. As the country gets richer, they write, it will be able to afford more health care as well, more health care. Government's share of the total health care spending will continue to be less than 10%, or about the 9.5% in the future, and they planned it out for 40 years hence. Finance Canada. And then there's a recent report of just a few days ago from the OECD. It includes all of the 30 member states or so, including the United States and Switzerland. And you know what it shows? That not only is our health care system more efficient, our health outcomes are better than those that adopt the market's approach. They're not perfect. They need to be improved. That's why the reforms, but better even as it exists. And friends, I've repeatedly challenged those who hold the view that markets and free enterprise and profits will take care of everything in healthcare to bring forward their evidence. And I say here in British Columbia, as I stand before you, I again repeat the challenge, show me a documented study by expert or experts in this regard to make your point that the markets will do the better job. I want to tell you, even though I make this challenge today, I've been doing it for 18 months or more, and even during the Royal Commission hearings, I can tell you today the silence is absolutely deafening. There is no evidence. There is no evidence. So, privatization becomes kind of a code word. Sustainability does for privatization, for markets to rule. It's a code word. It's a hidden word. It's not sustainable, so we got to go private for profit. And worse, this vision is portrayed, as I say, something new out of the box. I want to speak to the newness. Now, let me read you a quote. It's a lengthy quote, but please bear with me as I'm approaching the end of my remarks. Please bear with me to think about this quote. And while I'm reading it, I ask you, think of which Canadian premier said this and when. Quote, what is meant by universal, by the way, this speech was made in the context of disputing and wanting to do away with our Medicare plan. Quote, what is meant by universal is that the plan, referring to our Medicare plan, arbitrarily includes everybody. Whether they need the benefits and whether they wish to be included or not. It is a compulsory program in which participation is compelled by the state. I'll add my words as if the state is something different than ordinary people and voters, but nonetheless, it is a compulsory program compelled by the state and not left to the voluntary choice of the citizen himself. This, the Premier said, violates a fundamental principle of a free society, namely the right of each citizen to exercise freedom of choice, end quote. Freedom of choice. So who's the Premier who said that? And when? Wrong. Premier Ernest Manning in Alberta in 1965. And you see, when I asked you who said it, and you throw out some names of current politicians, the old has become the new. I'm not going to read you the quote again, but let me just read you this one point. Mr. Manning, for whom I had a great deal of, I didn't know him well, but I had a great deal of respect for him. I disagreed with many of his policies. I wasn't active, but as a young student, saw him. Mr. Manning said this, again, Medicare violates a fundamental principle of free society, namely the right of each citizen to exercise freedom of choice, end quote. Now that sentiment, as you told me today, in slightly different words, slightly different faces, is being sold again. Freedom of choice. Well, friends, ask the parents or the guardians of millions of American children who are not covered by health insurance if they're enjoying their exercise of freedom of choice. Ask any senior citizen in Canada who remembers how life was before Medicare, where serious illness or injury endangered, as I say, one's livelihood or farm. Ask them if they liked the experience of freedom of choice. The answer is resoundingly no. And so despite all the evidence, despite the clarion call of Canadians to the Royal Commission to support Medicare, nonetheless, the voices are still there. The old becomes the new. So we're at a serious crossroads. My friends, what pathway shall we choose? What side of this debate will you choose? Well, the good news is that Canadians continue to overwhelmingly support our vision of healthcare as a public good. It needs major review. No need about that, I agree. But what it does not need is a rear-view mirror approach, backtracking to a time, as I say, when people of modest means got sick worrying about getting sick. That is not the answer. That's what we do not need. And thankfully, we have some emerging voices which want to give that democratic expression to the public good emerging in this period right now. This is not a political meeting. This is a speech to seniors talking about my report as I see it. But I'll make one comment. Just a few weeks ago, I noted that the Prime Minister of Canada said that increased Ottawa resources would be forthcoming to buttress Medicare, but they would be tied to reforms, needed reforms. If the resources are both adequate and predictable over a long period of time and the conditions for reform have reasonable flexibility and are proper and are transparently reported to you, then this is a cause for some hope. But time will tell. So where do we go from here? Well, you have taken the first step today. As I come to a conclusion, where do we go from here? You have this large turnout. I want to cite Monique Bejean. Some of you will know her. Many of you will know her. She was the author of the Canada Health Act, which had the core services back in 1984. And she has said this repeatedly, Monique has. She said, the only true guardians of Medicare in Canada, this most cherished expression of what it means to be a Canadian, the only true guardians are the people of Canada. And I agree, the people of Canada. And so when you hear governments saying it's not sustainable, it doesn't match the evidence, nor does it match the will of the people. And when premiers say, well, we're not going to have Medicare around for 10 years from now, I say, not so fast. The Canadian public is going to have a say about this. And when the first ministers meet soon, whenever it comes, I urge them to have their deliberations televised so that all of us can watch it. Mr. Trudeau did this in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. I urge them to have the deliberations on health care and Medicare televised. No more backroom deals when it comes to the things that critically affect the future of our country.
No more short-term quick fix deals. No more money advanced to protect the status quo. No more private talk about privatization, but failure to talk about it publicly because of what the Canadian public will say. No more. And for those who do believe in privatization or a marketplace approach, let them have the courage to say so in front of all of the television cameras of this nation so that the Canadian public, as the guardians of Medicare, can judge where their vote will go. And if they do have such an open public meeting, and by the way, I'm so strong in it because I'm not pointing fingers at any of my former colleagues. I did more than my fair share in those backroom meetings. It was acrimonious and it was tough. And nobody watched us. 14, two officials, one federal, one provincial. And only sometimes would the debates end if someone would say, okay, if you believe in more privatization, go down to the microphones and tell the 150 journalists that that's where you want Canada to go, because I'm coming down right behind you to tell you where you're wrong, and that's not the way to go. And somehow, we all came out getting more money, getting some reforms, but not the fundamental ones. That's why I'm not for closed-door meetings. And so if this TV meeting takes place, as I urge it to do take place, and I'll close on this, there are three options. This is why I say it's crossroads. Three options available to Canadians as I see it, articulated by Dr. Greg Marshallden. One option, status quo. Leave things the way they are. We know that doesn't work for you, doesn't work for me. Status quo shows no respect for the need to reform modern-day medicine the way modern-day medicine is being delivered. We need renewal. But that's one option. You can say status quo. It'll sort of just die slowly. A second option is to say, okay, we're going to turn it over to the provinces. British Columbia, Saskatchewan, Quebec, doesn't matter. Turn it over to the provinces, lock, stock, and barrel. This would have the advantage of at least knowing who's responsible. You'd have, however, no Canada Health Act. You'd have no national Medicare. You'd have a hugely patchwork quilt Canada. And my friends, what kind of a nation would be left behind? I'm not for that option. And the third one is leadership by Ottawa. Leadership by Ottawa. The blueprint is done, the reforms are known, the resources are required and are clear, and the values of Canadians, which you built, are clear. This requires a vision articulated and advanced, and leadership, and to say to the provincial governments and others, if you want the money, you're going to have to follow some conditions in order to make the change, and you're going to have to comply with, because that's the expression of Canadian will, the principle of a public good. And what do we need for specific reform? Stable, adequate funding from Ottawa. And then, of course, support by the provinces. There's got to be adequate funding from the provinces as well. This isn't a one-way street, but adequate funding. We need to modernize the Canada Health Act. Bring into the coverage of hospitals and doctors. Modernize it. Bring in home care. Bring in catastrophic drug coverage. Bring in the appropriate diagnostics. And I think maybe this may be even as important as anything. Bring in a sixth principle, and that is the principle of accountability. We want to know as Canadians where our money goes. Does it go to health care, and is it doing the job? And we need primary health care, and we need determinants of health. We need to deal with housing, environment, early childhood development. It can be done. It may cost money initially a little more, but it'll stabilize and save and improve and make sustainable our most cherished program. Friends, we cannot be complacent in this crucial debate. And I repeat again, nor do we need any more studies.
We had a wonderful opportunity in February 2003, right after my report was tabled, and I salute the Prime Minister and the Premiers of the day who acted very quickly, and some changes were made, but we fell short. It stalled. We don't need any more of that, but we may have one more chance coming up. Time is now to act. Time is now to secure, by transformation, Medicare, the Medicare that Canadians need and deserve, and the Medicare that you envisioned and worked for in your lives. As Alice in Wonderland said, jam yesterday, jam tomorrow, but never jam today. Well, my friends, I say we want jam today, and let's get on with it. Thank you very much. Good luck, and God bless you.